Good afternoon.
Bears fans, this is Take the North.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Welcome into the Take the North podcast, presented by Odyssey. I'm Adam Stasinski, alongside Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune. The countdown to the Bears' London game against the Jags is on. Dan, you are, about 2 hours from heading over the pond? How close are we to takeoff here for you, for yourself?
Yeah, about 3.5 from takeoff. I'll probably head to the airport a little earlier today just to get through some of the international waves of the travel experience and just try to get myself situated in 18C, you know, clear out some leg room, clear out some elbow room, and see if I can't fall asleep for a little bit. I stink, Adam, at falling asleep on airplanes, and so this could be a real challenge here as I make my trip over there.
Well, good luck. Hope it's a safe flight. And, you know, yeah, good old Terminal 5 in O'Hare. It's the best terminal on the planet. Let me tell
Actually,
you.
I'm out of three today. So
a
good deal. So it is an American Airlines flight. I think British Airways is the partner. So I actually don't have to go through the chaos of Terminal 5 on the way there. I think we'll land at Terminal 5 on Monday when it comes.
Yeah, so that's on the way back then, on the way back. Well, that's yeah. Well, I'll have fun with that. Anyway, so to business here. The headline, I guess you could say, out of London today for the Bears is the team chairman of the team chairman. There it is. The owner's son, George McCaskey, talked at London to the media. And it's not very often he speaks. You know, you get George on a mic. Like, I think I was trying to remember the last time that we heard from George in long form. It might have been when Kevin Warren was hired, because he didn't talk at the end of last offseason. He let Kevin do the speaking. So it's been a while since we actually really heard from him.
Yeah, typically the owners' meetings in March every year, he'll give us an audience and give us his state of the team there. That's probably the last time that I recall speaking with George. It's been an interesting week over there. For those who are over there, Adam, obviously you've had George McCaskey, Kevin Warren, Ryan Poles, Matt Eberflus, Caleb Williams. They've all spoken in the last 2 days. A lot of information coming from the biggest figureheads in the organization. I do think that there is an excitement percolating through the team this week about the opportunity to play overseas in London, and then obviously about the opportunity to continue climbing within this season. I think there's a sense collectively, internally, that they're positioned to do some things here that would enhance the excitement that's been existing for a while with this team.
And you know, the Bears have a decent little following over there too, so it's a good chance to continue expanding their brand. We actually on 670 The Score today in the Bernstein and Harris show had Noel Dowling on of the Irish NFL podcast, who we had on this podcast before the season started. He's a cool guy, and so we had him on talking about how the NFL has been expanding their brand overseas and about how he himself became an NFL fan. So it was really, really interesting. So And anyway, obviously, he's a big Bears fan, so there's a lot of excitement for him and his group of being able to actually go to a Bears game. So for the people that live over there that are Bears fans, like, this is a fairly unique experience because they're not there very often, and they're usually having to watch games at, like, midnight.
So, The other thing that I thought was notable that Ryan Poles talked about a little bit this week was the idea that this is neither a home nor an away game. And at times it will feel like both, because the crowd will get into it for various reasons at various parts of the game. And so you'll have some very avid Bears fans there cheering for the Bears, some avid Jaguars fans there cheering for the Jaguars. But then there'll be a whole bunch of neutral people that are just cheering for football. And so sometimes you're on defense and you think that you need the crowd to be louder. And sometimes you're on offense and you wish that the crowd could be quieter, you know, and so it'll be really interesting to see how it all kind of unfolds on Sunday at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. That'll be my second trip into that building. A little quick footnote from 2019, the press box there is optimally located, and you've got great seats. They're very low. It's not an indoor press box. You're outside amongst the masses. And then at halftime, I can't remember who the performer was. It was some English rapper, I believe. We could probably look this up on Google fairly quickly. But the halftime show was literally taking place like 6 feet behind my press box seat. There was like a little stage set up behind it. So every time they showed whoever this rapper was on the big screen, it was like you got the top of my head and then this guy dancing behind me. It was a very surreal experience to be in that environment and that close to the madness.
Well, we'll see if it happens again. Huh? I was trying to look up real quick who's going to be there to this year, but I couldn't find it. So, we'll find out, right? So, I guess we'll get into a couple of things here about what George actually had to say to the media. You know, it wasn't there wasn't anything necessarily newsworthy that I took away, but there was a decent amount of talk, right, about, you know, expanding their brand, which we just touched on, and then also about the stadium, because obviously the new stadium project, I should say. Obviously, Kevin Warren talked a lot about that the day before. George kind of was just echoing the same things that Kevin said, basically, and for the most part, basically said that's Kevin's deal and we're backing him on it.
I think there's a lot to come here with the legislative part of this project and trying to figure out in the coming months through the various sessions on whose attention they can get, whose ear they can grab, whose support they can gather to try to create momentum for this project. If they reach a point where it feels like a standstill to go down the path that they've been trying to go down for really the entirety of 2024, which is the vision to build on the lakefront, you have to consider that 326 acre property you own out in the suburbs, and it's still sitting there. There are certainly some aggressive pushes coming from the representatives in the suburbs as well. And it's going to be fascinating to see how this evolves and unfolds, because they've been pretty firm. And Kevin, obviously at the forefront of this, has been very, very emphatic in his vision to build this thing on what he calls the most beautiful piece of land in the United States of America, over there just south of where Soldier Field currently resides. But I think ultimately, when you get to the true nuts and bolts of the question, which is how are you going to pay for this? What are you going to do to create the logistical infrastructure that's needed to house something like this? Who's going to take on all that work and make sure that it comes to fruition? There's a lot of questions that remain unanswered. And it would lead me to believe, Adam, that eventually Arlington Heights is going to be able to get more than just a foot back in the door and be able to have some counter-say here. But again, we'll see in the coming 3, 4, 5, 6 months. And again, as David and I talked about earlier in this week, Kevin has been very firm in saying that there was going to be a shovel in the ground in 2025. Well, you can do the math on that. That leaves you 13 and a half months or so to really have, and probably less than that, because if you want that 3-year timeline of getting that stadium open to play in 2028, well, then you've got to accelerate when that shovel goes in the ground, and you've got to accelerate everything that comes with getting the project launched.
And, you know, like realistically, the Bears keep getting told no by the state of Illinois, and more specifically the governor, J.B. Pritzker. I mean, he has not tried to play a middle ground or anything. He's in more words, but said, no, it's not happening. We have bigger priorities for the state of Illinois right now than funding a new football stadium. And something that George mentioned today was the idea of getting the best deal for the Bears. Well, in my mind, the best deal is on the property you already own, because you're not going to get money from the state of Illinois as long as J.B. Pritzker's in office. At least, like it's they can keep asking. I don't see Pritzker changing his mind anytime soon. it's not happening. You're not getting that money. So at some point, kind of what you were touching on there, they're going to have to go back to Arlington, because it's just not going to get done on the lakefront if you're not getting money from the state, which, again, isn't going to happen.
The other part of this is some of those renderings you saw when there was the big presentation back in April were contingent on getting cooperation from the city of Chicago and the state to do all of the things that are in the periphery of the new stadium. You had that whole big, you know, grand idea for playing fields where the current Soldier Field currently exists. Well, the Bears aren't going to go and build that. They were relying on someone else to say, oh boy, that looks like a cool idea, and we're going to go follow up on that and be the people that put that together. And so there's a lot of questions there as well. I still think for the amount of opportunity that exists on the size of the land in Arlington Heights and the potential to open up, you know, revenue fire hydrants there, you would be wise to listen to every pitch that they come at you with. Now, listen, I understand that Kevin's a man driven by passion and driven by vision. And if he wants to see the city project and ambition through to the very last breath, then more power to him to give that a whirl. But it'll be fascinating to see where this goes. And obviously, I think what you heard from George today, Adam, is somebody that's put pretty firm trust and faith in the leadership that he hired when he brought Kevin Warren aboard to be the president and CEO.
And that, you know, that is George has been pretty consistent on when they make a hire, they let those guys do their job and they are fairly hands off. So he's going to let Kevin Warren do his job. The only other thing that I think we should at least mention that George talked about was he did confirm that, yes, back in 2020, the Bears were having conversations with Tom Brady to try to pursue him in free agency. Obviously that failed, but it is confirmed. I mean, Brady confirmed it already, but from the Bears' perspective, like, yeah, this is the first time we've heard someone that was with the Bears confirm that, yes, they were talking to Tom Brady.
You've heard me riff on this before, and I still think that there are layers to this story that are untold. I want Tom Brady to give us more detail on what the communication was, because George, for one, the first thing that caught my ear was he said, wow, that's pretty ancient history by now, you know, and it is, you know, it's 4 years ago and the Bears have flipped the page and Brady's flipped the page and he's won a Super Bowl with Tampa since and all the things that have gone on. And then the other thing, when he was asked, you know, if Tom visited, I believe George's answer was something along the lines of, not that I'm aware of. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's like, yes or no. Like, you would think that the greatest quarterback of all time visiting Hallis Hall, that the owner and team chairman of the Chicago Bears would know that that visit occurred. Now, it was weird times in 2020. It was COVID and this and that,
right,
and everything else that existed. There weren't a lot of visits happening anywhere. Believe me, I've got some visions of casting some hooks to people that could help me fill in some of these gaps, because Brady's assertion that the Bears were very much alive in that conversation still comes as a surprise to me, because I'm very curious as to what it was that they were selling him on. Given, as we've documented before, what they had to offer. But as George said, yes, there was interest, and then there were contingency plans. As we know, the contingency plans ended up being fourth round pick to Jacksonville for Nick Foles, and the rest is history, right?
Hey, yeah, no, hey, Bears did make the playoffs this year, and the Bears beat the Bucks that year. That's the crazy thing that I always forget. Like, they beat them that year. But
that sold
anyway,
the field on Thursday night with Brady forgetting what down it was.
That's one of the greatest like weird things that you look at in an NFL season, is the Bears were able to beat the eventual Super Bowl.
Remember,
champions.
Don't forget, like Brady wouldn't shake Nick Foles' hand after that game. Remember that?
That was the big talking point of the week. Yeah, I mean, the Bears kicked his ass that night, like defensively. Yeah. Like they had his number. But we'll go ahead and move on here and focus on the actual Bears football team, as the coordinators, as they typically do this time of the week, spoke. Shane Waldron continues talking about the offensive progress. What did you take away from him today, Dan?
Yeah, he stepped up to the podium today and called it the world tour for the Bears offense. And so off they are in the United Kingdom. What I found most notable from Shane today was his just insight on seeking balance within the offense. And it's not strictly seeking a run pass balance and trying to find an offense that can do both reliably that will open things up. It's him, and to an extension, his quarterback being responsible for spreading the football around in ways that keeps everyone happy. And that can be hard to do because you've got guys that are proven in this league, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, DeAndre Swift. You've got Cole Kmet. You've got an up-and-comer in Roma Dunze, and everybody wants to see the football. And week by week, you don't often get three guys with an opportunity to have a big game. And so that's something they have to be cognizant of going forward. It felt like they were cognizant of it against the Panthers in week five. And they understood that, look, like, we've got a player here in DJ Moore who's starting to get a little wound up with his lack of production through the first month of the season. And we better try to maybe get him the football a little bit here to get him unlocked. And they did so successfully. And so now you kind of go step by step, and you just have, it's a small thing, and it's not something you want to become fixated on, but it is something that you want to stay aware of just in order to get those guys the requisite amount of touches and keep everyone involved and everybody in a positive mindset. So I think Shane's awareness of that is something that's going to be worth monitoring here as the Bears go forward.
Right. And you know, he did talk specifically today about, you know, wanting to get Keenan Allen the ball more. And I'm curious, because I'm not going to necessarily predict this. Well, maybe I will when we get into our predictions. But we've seen in the last month, as the offense has gotten better, DJ Moore's had his good game. Roma Dunze had his good game against the Colts. DeAndre Swift has gotten going. Cole Kmet had his good game. So every time we've kind of focused in on a player that, hey, you know, this guy hasn't really done much yet.
Yeah.
Hey, they all of a sudden have a good game. So maybe this is you know, Keenan Allen, a couple weeks removed from the injury now. Maybe this is the week that he finally gets rolling.
Yeah. Well, so you would certainly expect him to see some targets. And it looked like it, like Caleb targeted him on the first pass of the game last week. And it might've been the case the week before as well against the Rams. And so there are opportunities there to get guys like that involved. And Ryan Poles talked on Wednesday about seeing Keenan run some routes against Carolina and feeling like, okay, there it is. There's the guy that we were watching on tape before we traded for him. And so the hope is that the heel injury and the foot issue that he's been dealing with now for a month and a half is starting to recede, and he's ready to play his best football as a Chicago Bear, obviously with a lot at stake as the Bears go forward.
Right. And something else that I know Shane touched on was about Caleb's, I guess, continued progression and the way he's handled things at the line of scrimmage,
sure,
which I know we've talked about a lot, but like just the fact that he's getting more comfortable in, you know, what he's seeing and getting them into the right play. And I mean, look, like this is maybe something we haven't talked about a ton, just how much Caleb is dealing with as a rookie quarterback. Like he's been giving all the keys to this offense, and he is operating the offense in a way that you'll see veteran quarterbacks operate. And, you know, especially when it comes to making checks at the line of scrimmage, changing the protection up front, getting them into the right play. Like it's the fact that he's made as much progress he has, considering how much has been asked of him, is fascinating. And then I know, though, that they've done things to help him get more comfortable with this, which is going no huddle the last couple of weeks. Yeah. Shane Waldron didn't directly say they're going to keep doing, but he, you know, why would you not keep doing it as long as it's working, which
well,
it has.
So weeks. It's interesting because he asserted that it's kind of a week by week puzzle that you put together with that. And I think part of the incentive a week ago was understanding that the Panthers without their two mainstay starting linebackers and Josie Jewell and Shaq Thompson. And so you felt like if you went no huddle, you'd force some younger inexperienced guys to have to do some more communication and adjust on the fly and really put some strain and pressure on them. And then at the same time, you gave Caleb an opportunity, even when you weren't going hurry up, but you were going no huddle and you were getting a line, you gave him an opportunity to see everything with time on the play clock to where he can digest it, think through things, and then figure out what the decision looks like against the coverages that the Panthers were showing. It's going to be fascinating to watch Caleb evolve in this regard. You've heard me really since April and May talk about the bandwidth that he's had and how impressive it is that he can handle the volume of information he's able to handle and do so without really showing much sign of obvious stress. I know we'll get into it after our prediction segment about kind of his ownership of the offense and his relationship with some of the veterans, because DJ Moore had a very notable adjective that he applied to Caleb during his press conference in London. But you are seeing a quarterback grow quickly, you know, and I think it's going to be really well-timed in a lot of ways for the Bears to come out of London and get the bye week and for Caleb to just catch his breath in week seven and just be able to go, okay, now let's reboot. Matt Eberflus has talked several times about how not only the bye after six games, but then you have the way your schedule is structured into November, you get coming out of Thanksgiving, you get kind of that mini bye. And so there's a really good kind of 6 week segment to the season that's going to give him an opportunity to catch his breath a couple times. I think this one will be come at a good point, and it should come with a confidence surge and good momentum as well.
Ideally, and you know, we'll get into that in a second in our predictions, but they are going to be facing a weak pass defense in the Jaguars. So one last thing I wanted to touch on for the coordinators, Eric Washington, the defensive coordinator, also talked today, and he spoke a little bit about Jaquan Brisker being out for this game and Elijah Hicks stepping in. And I was kind of curious when we first found out that Brisker was going to be out, who they were going to start opposite of Kevin Byard, because I figured that Jonathan Owens or Elijah Hicks were both worthy fill-ins. And it sounds like Elijah Hicks is the next man up. A lot to do, I think, because of his time in this system.
Sure. And he made six starts a year ago, filled in for both Jaquan and Eddie Jackson when they had injury issues in 2023. And he's just been reliable, you know, and so they feel really good with him back there. Owens is available as well if needed. And you go forward with a guy that has played for you and played fairly well, really, in the time that he's been on the field defensively. Been a pretty good special teams player for as long as he's been here. And so now it's another opportunity for Elijah Hicks to show some of the growth that he's made.
And I wonder if the way that they're going to play scheme-wise will be a little different, because we actually had a fascinating fact that came across, I came across today, that the Bears, unlike a lot of the league, haven't been running a lot of two deep safety looks. It's been like 38% or something like that. They've been doing a lot more man-free coverage kind of stuff. And that has, of course, I'm sure a lot to do with the fact that their corners are pretty good across the board. But I wonder how much that'll change when you have Jaquan Brisker out and, you know, maybe you're going to go with a little more too deep. So I guess that'll remain to be seen. The good thing is, like, the deepest part of the Bears roster is their defensive backfield. So like, you're fairly confident that Elijah Hicks is going to come in and ideally at the very least not get you killed when he's on the field.
No doubt. And you feel good about that. Eric Washington also spoke on Thursday and talked a lot about the progress that he's seen from both Jervon Dexter and Andrew Billings, who is two guys whose ability to rush the passer has shown up so far this season. I don't know that Andrew Billings has had an easier sack than the one he had last week, where they left him unblocked and he stampeded on Andy Dalton and absolutely smushed him into the Soldier Field grass. But he's been a big, big addition to this defense for the last two seasons, playing really well. And then to see Dexter kind of start to hit his stride, it gives you some teeth up front that we were all questioning going into the season. Could they find enough up front to create some of that pressure that helps the next two levels function? So far, so good. And in the next challenge comes Sunday in London.
Jervon Dexter's my guy. Been on him since they drafted. That's my guy. So
was he your pick for breakout player? I don't remember.
Ooh, that's a good question. I think he might have been. I think he might.
If he
been.
Is, you might be tooting your own horn in middle of January when we do our review.
All right, well, let's go ahead and get into our what to watch and predictions. All right, we know the opponent, Jaguars in London. It's going to be an 8:30 a.m. Chicago time kickoff, so set your alarms. Or if you are up getting ready to watch the marathon in Chicago like I will be, then you'll just perfect timing, really. Anyway, so things to watch here. Shane Waldron, offensive coordinator for the Bears, versus Ryan Nielsen and the Jaguars' extremely poor passing defense.
32nd ranked pass defense in the league. They're allowing an average of 327.8 passing yards, or I'm sorry, 287 passing yards per game. They've allowed three quarterbacks to go over 300 yards in their first five games. That's CJ Stroud, it's Tua Tagovailoa, and it's Joe Flacco. There's another quarterback on that list, Josh Allen, who had 247 yards and four touchdowns at halftime and was ahead 34-3 and barely played in the second half. So he would have easily gone over 300 if the Jaguars could have kept that game even a little bit closer. So it tells you what the Bears are working with here. There's going to be opportunities. Ryan Nielsen is a coordinator, is in his second season as a coordinator, first season in Jacksonville, who plays a lot of man coverage. That can be a real, real plus to a young quarterback who is looking to make it easy on himself and reading the field. If you know you're getting man, you know, how many times did Mitch Trubisky go to Detroit needing a confidence boost and play a Matt Patricia-led defense that played strictly man, and Trubisky had a big game, and you're like, there it is, he's back. You know, he broke out. You're going to get an opportunity here for Caleb Williams in this passing attack to have a big afternoon, because this Jaguars defense has not stopped anyone yet. They do have Trayvon Walker, number one pick a couple years ago. He's got five sacks and is going to be kind of the engine of that defense. But if you can neutralize him off the edge and create that clean, deep pocket that the Bears have talked about, Caleb should have stretches here, Sunday studs, where he's taking target practice. And remember, Ryan Nielsen brought his Falcons defense to Soldier Field on New Year's Eve last season, and Justin Fields and the Bears rolled up like 430 yards of offense and 37 points and blew the Falcons out of the building. So that's what you're looking at here. That is the opportunity of all opportunities. And Shane Waldron, I would imagine, has been in the lab this week trying to find the obvious vulnerabilities in this Jaguars pass defense to exploit. And if Caleb can stay in the rhythm that he was in against the Panthers, you're talking about a real potential for a confident springboard.
You know, I'll never ever understand stubborn defensive coordinators that run their scheme. We're going to run man because we run man. Well, you don't have the guys to run man coverage. Right. You just don't. Like, if you're covering Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, and DJ Moore with strictly man coverage, at least one of them is going to get open on every play. Like, you might win two out of three, but at least one of them is going to be open for sure.
Two more notable numbers for you on this standpoint. Number one, the Jaguars have not had an interception yet this season. So if you talk about a quarterback that has been trying to find the balance of when to take shots and when to take care of the football, well, this probably gives you an opportunity to do both, right? Because the Jaguars have not taken it away through the air yet this season. And that's a stunning number to believe. And opposing quarterbacks so far through the first five games have a passer rating of 111.7 against the Jags. Like I say, like they don't come more like ready-made for you than this matchup on Sunday. And so you would hope that Shane Waldron gets his guys positioned. And as you talked about earlier, trying to spread the wealth around, they may be able to spread it to three guys on Sunday. We'll be here on Sunday night on our post-game pod talking about the number of big days that were had by Bears playmakers.
That would be a lovely scenario. So next up here, we have a pair of number one overall picks facing off in this one, Dan. Caleb Williams, the number one pick this year. Trevor Lawrence, the number one pick a few years ago. Trevor's had his struggles the last year and a half. And it's kind of confounding to me just watching from afar. You know, we don't watch the Jags every week, but like to try to figure out what the heck has kind of happened to him. But it still is a fascinating matchup.
No, and it's fascinating to try to take a pulse on where Trevor Lawrence is right now, because you talk about riding a roller coaster through his first three and a half seasons here. You know, Lawrence is a guy in his second year when he was finally united with Doug Peterson, had a 4,000-yard passing season, threw for 25 touchdowns, put the Jaguars in the playoffs, came back from, I think it was 27 down against the Chargers in the wild card round of the playoffs and won a playoff game. And you're like, well, okay. That justifies having the number one overall pick. If you can do all that in your second season, it should be up escalator from there, and it hasn't been. This is a guy that in 55 career starts has 62 turnovers. The Bears should be feeling opportunistic about the opportunity to try to take the ball away from Trevor Lawrence. Then you get into this year's studs, and you've got a guy who in June signs a massive extension in Jacksonville, $200 million guaranteed, up to $275 million total, with them really going all in and saying, this is the guy. This is going to be our guy to take us to our next generation of Jaguars football and be in contention all the time. And then he gets off to an 0-4 start with the offense struggling mightily in September and, you know, averaging less than 200 passing yards per game in that 0-4 start. Well, now he's coming in off his best game of the year. And I think it was 371 yards and two touchdowns last week in the win over the Colts. Hit a long one to Brian Thomas Jr., who's an absolutely electric rookie. As much as we've talked about Harrison and Neighbors and Adunze, you can add Brian Thomas Jr. to that list of young pass catchers from the first round this year. Lawrence is also getting back, most likely Evan Ingram, who's missed the last four games with a back issue. He was his kind of top guy a year ago. Travis Etienne's out of the mix, but there's a lot here, and you just don't know which Trevor Lawrence you're going to face. It's, you know, and we've described two very different Trevor Lawrences in this conversation here, and the Bears have to figure out a way to make him the worst Trevor Lawrence on Sunday.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, when it comes to him, like ultimately, like you always should have a healthy fear of a guy with the type of talent he has. I mean, he was regarded as the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck for a reason. Like he was, and I guess still is an awesome quarterback prospect. So you have to have a healthy fear of him. And you know, I guess like the good thing is like, you know, especially when it comes to him passing the ball, what we just talked about, if you got faith in one unit on the Bears, it's their secondary. So
no doubt.
You know, look, if Brian Thomas is going to hurt you, just stick Jalen Johnson on him and you're not going to have to worry about it. So,
yeah.
So, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, just figure out a way to neutralize him. And Eric Washington talked a little bit about that on Thursday. It's about trying to take away the run. Tank Bigsby may be the guy that's getting the bulk of the carries on Sunday. And if you can put Trevor in those second and long, third and medium or longer and really play the game on your terms, then you can go after him and you can get him on the ground and you can get the football away from him and you can hopefully find your way, a pathway to victory.
And last note here, Bears ideally can get off to a fast start, because look, as if we're us recording this podcast Thursday afternoon, I don't think the Jaguars have left for Europe yet,
right?
Or left for London yet. So because the hurricane, this is shocking, the hurricane delayed their flight to London. So the Bears have an opportunity maybe to get off to a faster start than the Jags.
Part of the incentive of going early in the week was to get everybody acclimated and kind of settled in from a body clock perspective. And the more you've heard from people in the Bears organization over the last few days, players and coaches, about how quickly they've kind of found their rhythm in that regard, the more optimistic you feel again, we talked about 2019. Bears went late in the week. They really struggled out of the gates in that game against the Raiders and were down 17-0 early. And even though they did recover and eventually take the lead, you felt like that slow start was a big part of why they got back on the return flight, carrying the baggage that they carried, which was a big, fat, heavy loss, you know, from that game back for stadium. And so this is an opportunity, right, like to show that your travel strategy and your planning and all the things that went into the performance part of this equation paid off. And so, like, look, like, I think we'll have a pretty good idea by the time we start the second quarter whether the Bears are ready to go. And my gut says they will be.
Last part of this segment here, we'll go ahead and give our predictions. So I think we're going to be aligned on this one based on the conversation so far. Dan, I'll go ahead and go first. I have the Bears exploiting a weak secondary of the Jaguars and putting up some good yardage. I do think the Jags might be able to score a little bit of point. I'm a little nervous about the Jags being able to run the ball. But if the Bears are able to get up, same script as last week, get up early and force the Jaguars to have to pass a lot, then I think they'll be just fine. I have the Bears winning this one 27-19.
I'm pretty close to that score. I've got 27-20 Bears. This is just a vote of confidence that they've done everything right this week to get themselves prepared to play and that they'll come ready to play. And then, as we've mentioned all week long, the one X factor in this game was whether you were going to be able to adjust to London fast enough, because on paper, the Bears are the better football team. They've had more success this season. They've got more playmakers, and it's their opportunity to show that again. This is one of those games that can stamp legitimacy on your season if you go out and handle your business, you know? And so you go out there and your offense gets humming against a vulnerable defense and you score 27 points and the defense keeps that streak going of holding the opponents to 21 or below. You get back on the plane and you're going into your bye week. So I'm sure some players are going to go on a nice trip to somewhere tropical next week just to get away for a little bit. With a three-game winning streak and a 4-2 record, my goodness, the positive vibes in Halas Hall and in the surrounding areas of Chicago are going to be off the charts.
All right, we'll move right along here. One of the last things we're going to touch on is how bossy Caleb Williams is. So here, we'll go ahead and play this clip first. DJ Moore in his press conference earlier in the week talked about Caleb trying to get everyone on the same page and helping lead them to success in the last
game. No, he's taking those strides that he needs to. He's been bossy lately, telling us that we need to be on the details, but we really do for him to be the best player he needs to be. So, but yeah, I think that's it.
DJ, what did you do with that? Have you seen him assert himself more as a leader over these 5 weeks?
He's been a leader. So what I mean by bossy is we don't hit something in practice. He's going to tell us how we need to run it, this, that. And we just look at him and be like, okay. And then when we get out there on the game, you just better make sure it worked because he's going to have some words for you if you don't. So that's him being a leader. He's a little bossy. No, it's the little bro, so.
That's what you want, right? He's younger than I guess. That's what you want to see.
Yeah, you do want to see that. Like I said, he's like little bro, so you like looking at him like, dude, don't be talking to me like that. But it's like a. But I understand because we need to really connect on that, and that's what we did this past week. So I took his advice. I listened. You know what I'm saying? Older bro had to take a back seat for a second.
All right. So first, before we react in total here, this is what Caleb then had to say when he was asked about it, basically right after DJ's.
I think partially it was me learning everybody and understanding how everybody, you know, reacts to certain things. Certain people you can be a little bossy with. Certain people you have to talk very monotone and control of yourself. A lot of times just people that you can just kind of lash out, and I don't really lash out much. It's not really my vibe, but you know, just always coming over to talk to, you know, the guys when I can. Growing up a little bit, understanding that even when I'm frustrated about maybe it was, you know, a drive, a play that we had that, you know, we may have messed up, or you know, just whatever the case may have been. You know, understanding that you know, there's another drive coming. There's another part of the season that, you know, we have to focus on also. And so you know, being able to go over and talk to them, understand you know, how and what they need to hear, and then from there moving on. So I think the boss, and then the other part of it is getting more comfortable and understanding the offense a little bit better, getting more comfortable, calling in things like that, being in games, being in the live action moments, I think has helped me.
All right. So first of all, I love this. But second of all, I like that DJ Moore is being like funny and calling him bossy, but also like getting across like, yeah, it's a good thing that he's being more assertive. And then Caleb continues to show just a ton of maturity in realizing that everybody reacts differently to different forms of criticism. And some guys, yeah, you got to be bossy with. And maybe he discovered that, hey, DJ, do this. And not, you know, so I think it's a really good thing to hear coming out of this week.
Or maybe he's discovered that DJ doesn't quite respond as well to the very direct forward stuff, and he's learned to channel his emotions accordingly in that regard as well. I think there's a couple things here. Number one, DJ Moore to me is like now a made for PFT, made for aggregation press conference every week, because he's going to give you something that can be interpreted in like 25 different ways, right? And then people can go do their debate shows and talk about what it means and what it signifies. And so that's been fascinating to watch. Caleb, I think if you listen closely enough to all the things he said there, I think right after that was said, he said, bossy, that sounds a little sassy, which was a notable line coming back at that. But I do think that for as much as we praise Caleb for his maturity, and justifiably so, I think he's acknowledging that he does have some maturation to do early on in his rookie year. And it comes to what you speak of there is just like, okay, when I'm feeling frustrated, how do I get myself back to center to communicate my message in a way that resonates, you know? And when I'm talking to player X, I've got to press these buttons. And when I'm talking to player Z, I've got to press these buttons, and learning all the guys on the team in a way where you got to go, okay, I can't treat everybody the exact same, and I can't necessarily come breathing fire at everybody. I've got to find ways for my tone to resonate with the person that I'm speaking with. And so it's going to be really interesting to watch that play out. There's obviously great vibes right now between Caleb and DJ based on what they did against Carolina. You connect five times, I think it was, for 105 yards, 2 touchdowns. Everyone's going to feel really good about that. But that's coming off of September where they were disconnected on a lot of plays down the field, and we were microanalyzing DJ Moore's body language. And so as this season plays out, older brother is going to have to acclimate to younger brother, and younger brother is going to have to, you know, communicate to older brother in a way that's productive for everybody involved. And I do think that is a work in progress for everybody. I'm thrilled to be covering a team like this that feels open in this way, to be able to, on a weekly basis, give us some behind the curtain looks on how they're feeling, how they're reacting, how they're responding. That's certainly the case in this exchange this week in London with little bro and big bro and bossy and, you know, and the guy who's bossing around.
Well, hopefully it continues to bear fruit and lots of yardage and touchdowns. The last thing we'll touch on, the injury report this week for the Bears. We already talked about Daquan Brisker is going to be out. Kyler Gordon was limited for a practice and now was full on Thursday, so it looks like he's going to be okay. Tevin Jenkins, though, went from limited to did not practice with his ankle injury. So that is the one thing I think we're keeping an eye on still going into Sunday, is will the left guard be Bill Murray or Tevin Jenkins?
Or Matt Pryor. Do you play those pieces around in a way that works best for you? It's going to be interesting to keep an eye on that. We obviously know Brisker didn't make the trip. But other than that, the Bears are pretty healthy on the first line of their starting depth chart. They've been pretty fortunate through the first 5 games of the season so far. Hopefully they can get on that plane back from London on Sunday night and feel like they're in a pretty good space health-wise. And then, as we talked about with our predictions, they're obviously going to score 27 points, and then the Jaguars are either going to score 19 or 20.
It's going to be a missed extra point that'll give him 19. That's what's going to happen. All right, we got to wrap up so that Dan can get to O'Hare and get on his flight to London. Thanks so much for listening to the Take the North podcast presented by Odyssey. Continue to download, listen, and subscribe as we move along here, and we will talk to you Sunday afternoon sometime after the Bears play in London.
Great talk. See you out there.
Thank you, everybody. The Bears.